The Napoleonic Era. Napoleon in Exile, 1815 to 1821. Daily Routine, Part 2. This will look at Napoleon's morning ride, his bath, his lunch, and his audiences. And Napoleon's daily rides didn't hold any real surprises for him, and he actually soon tired of them. They were pretty much limited to the gloomy Deadwood Plateau, where the British army was encamped, beside the black silhouettes of the barn, the goat's mount, and the alarm house. And the alarm house is where the British spies kept a watch on him. On his return, Napoleon would usually ride by Miss Mason's cottage on the south side of Fisher's Valley. She was an interesting lady, very eccentric, slightly mad, an old English woman who was made fun of by the other colonists because she saddled and rode a bullock. She didn't ride a horse, she rode a steer, or a neutered bull, and really liked Napoleon and actually showed him exaggerated respect. To get back to Longwood faster, Napoleon would sometimes cut across the valley, go down a small stream that flowed through a damp, marshy land. Here stood the cottage of Mr. Robinson, a farmer, whose daughter, Mary Ann, had never before seen such dashing horsemen. She would come out, curtsy to them, and offer them flowers. Napoleon would laugh and tease Gourgaud, quote, "She pays more attention to you than me, because you're a bachelor. These poor girls think of nothing but getting married," end of quote. But just to give you an idea of just how the goings-on in St. Helena were reported back to Europe, the gossip didn't take very long to start talking about the girl. And even they knew Napoleon's nickname for her. He called her the Nymph, and the valley that she lived in was known as the Valley of the Nymph. There were pictures published of her, usually depicting her with a bunch of flowers, smiling at Napoleon and his officers. After the ride was finished, or the morning walk, if Napoleon decided to do the morning walk, then a lunch would be served. I know there is some somewhat strict etiquette here. If he ate lunch in his private room, the head cook would bring the dishes as far as his bathroom, where the servant on duty took over, and then brought them to Napoleon's valet, Marchand, who then served them to Napoleon. But it's usually around 10 o'clock in the morning. Remember, he just had a little light something at 5 or 6, 6 or 7. And Napoleon had changed his clothes, gotten out of his riding outfit, and had changed into a dressing gown. Napoleon usually invited Las Casas to join him, or sometimes one or two of the other officers. When all four members of his suite were invited, it was a real sign that he was in a really good mood. Now, weather permitting, the table would be laid out in the garden, usually under the arbor or in the shade of an evergreen oak. The menu was simple. It's basically a soldier's meal, actually. With some variations. First of all, your first round would be soup, served very hot. Napoleon believed the hotter the better, and it was good for you. It was either chicken broth or consommé de la reine. He considered it healthful. Then you had the meat course, either chicken or mutton, with beans or lentils. As I said before, this is the typical soldier's menu. Washed down with watered-down Bordeaux wine, and later with a cup of hot coffee. This didn't last very long because the meal barely lasted around 10 minutes. So he's pretty much sucking this stuff down pretty fast. After this lunch, Napoleon usually went to the billiard room where he worked, either dictating his memoirs or taking a nap, depending on the weather or his mood. Dictation and research work were shared between Las Casas and the other three officers, so that each one of the four men would have an audience with Napoleon in turn. Napoleon would simply say, "Write," and then he would start dictating. He dictated by clasping his hands behind his back and pacing up and down. This is where his ideas came the most easily to him. It was a tedious task for the generals, because they're choking in their high collars and hampered by their braided uniforms. Once dictation was over, it was time for Napoleon's bath. An hour before, the valets and the Chinese servants were usually busy around an old circular contraption of pipes that were heated by a fire. The hot water ran in a thin stream into an enormous copper bathtub. Napoleon took these hot baths as almost boiling, as hot as he could stand. Once again, he considered it medicinal treatment. The water was up to his neck, his body was relaxed, his nerves were soothed, and he would talk. He usually talked to Las Casas or Marchand or one of his generals, or he would skim the pages of a book lying on a rest, or even periodically would finish up his lunch. Afterward, Marchand would help him out of the tub and help dress him. He would wear a white shirt, black tie, white stockings, buckled shoes, white waistcoat, white coat, and a cockaded hat. So he's changed clothes here. Once Napoleon was dressed, he would go into the drawing room to receive visitors. Before he came out, the generals would gather around talking, just simply waiting for him. In 1816 and 1817, there were a large number of foreigners that would be received. Local officials, important inhabitants of the island, arrivals by sea, high officials of the crown going to India, coming back from India. There were a lot of people who in the area stopped just to see him. The Grand Marshal would hand them an invitation card. They would then go to the governor of the island, who would give them a pass. Basically an ugly piece of printed paper from a local company. Not much better than what you'd get as a pass to go visit your prisoner in prison. It would state, quote, "The officer commanding the guard at Longwood will permit the bearer, Mr. Blank, to pass to the residence of General Bonaparte on Blank, given at headquarters, St. Helena, this Blank, 18 Blank, with a memo that said this ticket will be delivered to the office of the guard, will then transmit it to the governor the following morning." Now, you didn't necessarily need one for everybody. If it was a man and his wife, that included him and it would say his wife. Now, these audiences continued for 2 years, and Napoleon really enjoyed them. They were his intellectual stimulation because he was in an intellectual desert. Not that his associates around him were intellectual deserts, but you're doing this day after day after day after day, you get kind of used to one another. Visitors were usually cultivated people full of fresh impressions of the Orient. And this conversation really set Napoleon's memory and his astonishingly alert intelligence to work. So now we're mid-afternoon. We're ready to take a break before we move on. However, the next time we'll look at the ceremony involved with these audiences before we go to some of his other activities for the day. Now, the sources for this, Napoleon St. Helena by Martineau, Memoirs of St. Helena by Las Casas, Cachiers de St. Helena by General Bertrand, St. Helena Who's Who by Dr. Chaplin, and the Journal of St. Helena by General Gourgaud. So I hope you enjoyed that, and as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment. Check out the CDs, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.